At GBQ, we're always counting. Now we're making your time count with this episode of Empower Hour. Start the clock. Our guest today is Gary Ross. Welcome, Gary.
Glad to be here. Thanks a lot, Doug.
So if you don't know Gary, Gary's a dual threat business entrepreneur. He's successfully started businesses and invested in companies. And I think in some of the startups, he's actually gone out and raised funding to help power those businesses. Researching Gary's background, he started life as president, or didn't start, but he worked his way up into a role as president of a Fortune 500 company here in Columbus, led two smaller $10 million family-owned businesses that were both technology companies, and he successfully started up three companies. His life has been filled with a lot of hats, but I think the two he's wearing right now most firmly on his head is one, he's the president, CEO, and evangelist for a startup company here in Columbus, Med Compliance IQ. He's the business coach to others as Gary Ross Coaching, where he coaches both startups and existing businesses, I think, Gary, that need a little bit of extra help at the leadership level.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I told him when we started, I was disappointed because he's also a friend, and that wasn't in any of his promotional material or his bio. He was a coach. He coached me in my prior business that was acquired by GBQ almost 5 years ago. We became friends out of that coaching experience, and I got to return the favor because Gary became a client of ours as we helped him secure and meet some compliance standards. And now I think we brought him over here to GBQ, and he's not just working on the tech side, but also we're doing some core accounting practice work with him. So welcome, Gary. I know your energy and passion for business and people is going to make this an interesting conversation.
You love the idea, and I can't wait to see what you have to unfold here for us in this conversation. I mean, we're going to talk for an hour, right?
Well, I think you and I have it in us to go longer than that, but it's the Empower Hour. So our marketing people will not be happy if I give them 2 hours of voice, but so be it. There's a lot to talk about. I certainly want to talk about your startup because that's pretty cool. But, you know, the one thing that stood out in your profile, I've known you for 5 years, and I didn't realize that, you know, you're at, what was it?
Emerson 7 years. Electric? We met in 2015.
Yeah, Emerson Electric. Well, you were there and worked your way up to president. So you're president of a Fortune 500 company, big company. And then you, you know, the joke I said when in the pregame was, it seems like every year you get into smaller businesses. So you went from that to a couple different runs with technology firms that were family owned in the $10 million range. And now, you know, here as your career's matured, you're coaching a bunch of different small businesses. You've started one that's a technology company. So now you're down in the world of risk reward from a small business perspective. I know you, there's passion for you in that, but tell me about that path from big company through some smaller mid-market family-owned firms to now this Gary Ross entrepreneur and coach of small businesses.
It's certainly nothing that I planned. I didn't set a goal and say, I'm going to move on this path to get into startups and the entrepreneur world. At Emerson, where I ran a division for them, that was a large division. I ran one of the divisions for them. It was a great company, great training ground. They're known for development of their leaders. And I learned so many things there. And one of the things that after a while, after being there 14 years, I thought, man, I've learned all this stuff. Can I apply this in my own company? And become my own CEO, my own team, my own culture, and take all this that I've learned and, you know, build my own team, you know, get my own team fired up. And so that's why I moved initially down to smaller companies that I could run and build and grow. And both of them actually were great experiences where I learned again. You know, small companies are different than big. A lot of times you're sitting there and you're the only one. You're in your office and you realize that your decision is going to be the decision that gets made. And that's really exciting. It's also something that you end up taking very seriously because you're not surrounded by all these great people that you have in a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah, I used to joke when I had my own firm that the marketing department opened up after dinner. It's certainly a very different experience being at a great firm like GBQ. And I don't have to worry about some of the things that, you know, particularly a startup does or a small business that entrepreneur or small team of entrepreneurs that have created an idea and invested in it and they're trying to grow it, they still have to do all that back office stuff. And you know, I assume you help balance those things out. And as you work with some of your coaches or mentees, I guess, as you would say, what do you think some of the obstacles are for small business? Because you don't have that team around you to help take care of some of those things.
I think that's it. These small businesses need to lean on someone like me as a business coach or GBQ as a finance coach. You know, they need that expertise and they can bring it in as they need it. So it helps their budget by making it project related or part-time to augment what they're already doing. That CEO at the most businesses have such passion. I love the passion of the small business world, that CEO and the startup world. I mean, these guys are doing everything they can to make their company successful. And I love working with CEOs just like you, Doug, that wanted to be bigger. They wanted to be better. They want to be Google. They want to get to the top. And you have so many of these CEOs out there that are like that, but they don't really have the team built up yet. And there, you know, people like myself or GBQ team can really jump in and help them out.
Yeah, I think you do. Is when you start a business and have an idea, you think you're going to be Google. And there was a point in time I would have been happy to be a half of Google. And now it's just fun being the Google here at GBQ, running the IT services practice. So it's been quite a route for me. It's been a route for you. We've been in Columbus for a long time. You know, I think small business and innovation, even in the bigger businesses, Columbus has always been known as an innovative community. But it seems like that whole thing's heated up lately. There's a lot of really interesting activity in the small business world and the startup world, a lot of innovation coming out of here. What are you seeing now in the market that really stands out where Columbus is showing, you know, kind of the peak of its innovative experience, even though we've got a long history of it?
Well, I think younger people kind of big companies want to do their own thing. So right now I'm working at some of the high schools. I received an award from the Olentangy School District in 2019 for my involvement in Olentangy schools. And one of them doing is working with our DECA program, which are marketers within the high school. You can choose an elective course. It's called DECA, and you can compete at the state level and go on to national. So there's this whole thing going on in schools where these, the kids in the high schools have ideas for startups. And now the schools are starting to nurture that. So these high school students are coming out with these ideas and a plan. And I help them in that process in the Olentangy School District. They've actually bought a book and use it instead of the text in the Olentangy Berlin School. So I go in there and I work with these students and I can see the innovation. And they're so creative. They're so creative. It's really amazing to see the creativity of a high school student. And they have these ideas you might think are crazy, but they're so passionate about them. And I help them develop that. And I think as these students have come out and got, you know, into the business world out of school, they want to do their own thing. They might as well take a chance. I mean, what they have to lose, they're, you know, maybe still at their parents' house. So they just got out, they got their own place, and they're going to take a chance. So I think the younger people are what driving this whole, I agree with you, the Columbus startup community is really buzzing.
Well, and we're old enough that, you know, it was a crazy idea to think you could build your own computer system using a configurator on a website. And that grew out of some guy that was building computers out of his college dorm room. It was crazy to think that all the computing power that I could possibly need is going to be able to slide into my back pocket in a phone. I mean, a lot of the innovations that we see started with crazy ideas, or at least somebody saw a problem and what they found is the solution seems to be a crazy idea. So I absolutely get that. And I think that I've got kids in that age band, group, I think some of them in our age bands, they kind of discount the creativity because they don't work like us. And they think differently. And it's definitely a generational shift, but that creativity comes out of that for sure.
Yes, absolutely. One of the organizations I've gotten involved with in the community along this line is SeaChange. SeaChange, I was an advisor for them in 2020, which means I go in and I help these typically young CEOs that are companies. And the focus of SeaChange is on social impact, which, as you know, is a big thing. And forming an organization and a company That's maybe a B Corp or a social impact organization. It's a big trend for the startups. Can you make an impact as a company? And so I've got involved with Sea Change to kind of give back to the startup community and help out these social impact CEOs. And I was actually assigned to a CEO to them. So that's an example of something new in the last, you know, 5 years that is happening in the startup world here in Columbus.
So Sea Change, first I've heard of it. The capital C, I would assume.
Change. No, C, like water, the sea. The
ocean. So it is Sea Change. I get the play on the words. So we're trying to change CEOs to change the community, essentially. I'm probably butchering the thought of behind it.
But we want to launch social impact organizations that can make a sea change.
Perfect. Perfect. So, I mean, that's part of why we're doing this Empower Hour, is this realization that, you know, building new business, startups, small businesses being successful, bigger companies being innovative, certainly builds wealth. It certainly provides jobs, but there's a lot of other social impact that comes to a successful community like Columbus from these startups. So what do you see, particularly with some of these newer businesses? You know, some of them just built right into the mission of the business isn't just let's make money, but let's make money and have a positive social impact. What are some of the right. impacts you're seeing lately from the small business community?
I've helped startup companies where we establish those missions you're describing. I've looked at B Corps and social impact type of legal entities and work with legal teams to help set those up for people. It's a big thing. People want to do that. The CEOs want to make an impact. All of them want that to be part of their charter. I'd say most of them, you know, that I work with, they want to make a social impact. Having them think through that mission, messaging down, you know, how do they really feel about it? And some of them, you know, if you look at, you know, where do I put my weight? Do I put it more in social impact or put it more in profit? You know, where does that weigh? You know, some people are different than others in terms of how much weigh on one side versus the other. But I try to put their passion and help them out. But there definitely is a trend there.
Well, I think there's a trend in the smaller, in the startup community with some of these younger entrepreneurs. It's really, there's a lot of nonprofit growth that, you know, they want to build a nonprofit to have an impact. And so at that point, profit certainly is set on the back burner and the impact is on the front burner. And you certainly talk to a lot of younger entrepreneurs, but that's not to discount the generations, because business leaders live here. So why, you know, certainly why don't we want the community to be raised up is part of the point of it, I think, is what you're making.
Absolutely. It's not just, young people, but those are the big impetus that are driving it. But I'm coaching a startup that, you know, isn't a young person. It's a older person, and they will be successful too, and they can impact also. So, you know, it could be any age. We're looking at, how do we make that company better? How do we, you know, make it attractive to its customers? Because customers are looking for that more and more. If you have a company and you don't talk about these things, you may lose business, because customers are looking to deal with companies that have that kind of mindset.
So business coaching, I know, it's right. We met in 2015. I think it was one insistent email, but knowing you, because you're kind of non-stoppable force, it was probably 12 emails that said, I can help you. I can help you. And I finally took the appointment and you certainly were able to help me. You and I are both sports guys. Our sports spectrum is very different. I used to like to play rugby and wrestling, so I was a little bit more smash mouth. Your sport loves are a little more sustainable. I think marathoning's something you can do much later in life. So I get the sports analogies you're coaching. What's a business coach? Is it a similar kind of thing?
Well, there's a lot of people that say that they're coaches and they all do different things, you know, so it's a confusing topic to CEOs, because they're hit by many different types of coaches, and there's coaches that help coaches too. So there's all kinds of coaches. I think if you are a coach, it's really defining for the market, for the customer, even for yourself, what is my niche? You know, what am I really good at that people would be willing to pay for? And that takes some time to get to that point. When I first started, I was not really sure. So I think anyone that starts a coaching business really trying to find your niche and learn how to communicate that as best as you can. But coaches can be all kinds of different things. And, you know, my coaching is different than almost every other coach that I've met. I've been a CEO. So I know I've walked in the shoes of the CEOs. I know exactly pressures that they're dealing with, especially if they have a board. So I can help them through that. I've helped CEOs that have had boards with their annual reviews, with responding to the board. You know, these are highly political sensitive things that they trust me with to help them because they don't have that experience. That's just an example. But I try to, you know, really go in and compliment the skills of the CEO. You know, sometimes a new CEO doesn't have the answer. They could use someone like me that says, you know, how should I deal with the board? How should I deal with the raise of capital? What should I do about this employee that I put in this VP role and now it's not working out? What am I supposed to do? Or, you know, how do I get the technical conscious product? I keep telling them what to do and I'm just not getting it done. You know, so I go in and I compliment their skills, work alongside them, try to be part of their team and actually help them execute instead of giving them a list of things they need to do.
So I'm a young CEO. I'm a experienced CEO. I know that I want to take it to the next level, but I'm not quite sure what to do. You already said there's a lot of different types of coaching. People bring, you know, their particular skill set. What questions do I ask? I'm looking for a coach. How do I interview those coaches and find that right match for me? Because it sounds like there are firms that you match up real well with and others you might not, and vice versa. There's a coach for everybody. How do I sort through the coaches that are available and find that right match?
Yeah, I think define your objectives. What are you looking for? Yeah, you know, what are the holes that you have in your company? What are you struggling with? And you know, what are those things you're not able to solve? Just looking realistically in the mirror. Yeah, you know, what are the things we're not accomplishing that we need to accomplish? And it's really that frustration of the CEO that drives them to a coach. They're not getting what they want and they want to think bad. And that's when I come in and I try to bring energy and hope and ideas and creativity and all the tools that I've learned throughout the years to try to help them get there. But you know, it's really defining what it is that we need to do to get that business. Sometimes it's not, I found that, you know, the initial idea of what, when I come in, is not what we end up working on. It really ends up being something else that they did not see that actually is the issue. So I think defining as best they can what the issues are, what they're trying to accomplish, and then have some coaches come in to talk to them, see, you know, what kind of programs they have and how they fit versus that goal.
I can certainly vouch for the fact that you start in one place and end up somewhere else sometimes once that perspective. And I think that was the biggest thing, having you that period of time you coached me in my role as a CEO, because it changed my perspective. It broadened me in some ways, got me to get out of some of the details and look at some strategic issues that I wasn't addressing. And I certainly think any coach is going to come in and help change that perspective. And that was one of the reasons it was valuable to me. But, you know, just like the sports that I've played, a coach is going to get you to, you know, being a lot of success is in the fundamentals. And sometimes as an entrepreneur, you forget those things. A lot of success in, you know, sports is the proper stance. It's the fundamentals. And it's the same kind of thing I think a business coach helps provide.
Absolutely. And I've gotten better since I coached with you. I mean, I look back and I think, man, I could have done so much better with Doug and other people during that time. And I've learned, you know, since I started in 2014 to do coaching, I've learned a lot myself. I'm still learning, you know, how to be good at what I do. I'm not a consultant. That's not where I came from. I've been a CEO. I'm an operating guy. So to come out there and coach is something different. So I've learned, you know, how to utilize my skill to really help someone, something that's kind of a, you know, something that grows on you.
Well, that's cool. That's good to hear. I don't think that I would expect you to be the same coach you were 5 years ago. Part of being successful, and when I talk to people that have been successful, is that everybody's got a learning curve, and 5 years is a lot of time for a natural learner to learn new tricks and bring those to the work that they do. So it's no surprise there that you've changed some. That's good to hear, actually. Not that it was bad, but but it's just as you as the world around us changes, you've got to evolve and continue to learn to grow. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've got to be willing to change, learn and adapt and be flexible.
But I think the thing about you is you're not just a coach. You're still doing, right? We've got this really cool technology company that you've been founder, CEO, president. I think in the intro, you noticed I gave you a promotion to evangelist. Because I know that you're always talking the company up. Tell me about Med Compliance IQ and what you're doing there.
Hey, Med Compliance IQ develops software that helps with analyzing wounds, chronic wounds, surgical wounds, burn wounds. And we help physicians and nurses heal those patients more effectively through our technology. We're using artificial intelligence, learning systems, image analytics. So we're using some different techniques to try to take pictures and video of wounds and then translate that and give data and information back to that physician. So that's really what we're focused on. I didn't think you could build this around wound care and software, but there's a lot of players in this space. One of the things you do when you start up a company, and I first talked to the physicians at Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, first met them, and we started the company in 2016, and I met the physicians before that that invented a product, and they're like, Gary, there's no competitors. You are going to dominate this market. And so one thing you find out when you get into startups is that there are always a lot of competitors. You are rarely the first one. So you really got to move fast. You have to move fast. Med Compliance IQ, I mean, it's amazing to me. Our first raise was in 2016, and here we are. It's 2021. I mean, it's amazing that this has all happened. I decided it would be quicker. And so I've learned a lot. This is my first full-fledged startup. We're a C Corp. We have a board of directors. A complex entity first. We can just start up as an LLC. And we've raised nearly $1 million, half of that roughly through grants, state grants. Shout out to Third Frontier and that whole program. That's what's going. You know, Third Frontier money and money through Rev One Ventures is our lead investor. We're able to get our first product built. So getting that, if you have a software startup, there's a little bit tougher road to raise money for the most part. People don't have, $200,000, $300,000. And that's what it takes to get that first product out. If you have software, if you have a service business, if you're offering, financial consulting, you can start up tomorrow, if it's you and your computer. But if you have software, there's something else. And my niche is really software and technology and service businesses. And a lot of service businesses have technology, so they're trying to develop technology too. So that's kind of my niche there. And Med Compliance IQ, we got our first product out to market, which in healthcare is difficult. We had to get FDA registered. We had to go through tests and trials with our product. So it's a little bit longer runway in healthcare. And we got to market and got customers with this product.
So I'm going to stop. And I've learned in running an IT practice and helping business people understand IT jargon that some of what you just said about image analysis and other things probably sounds to some folks that are listening like a Star Trek episode. So I remember when we first started working together, when you became a client of mine and I was helping with some of the security and the compliance of the product that...
And I didn't know anything you were talking about.
Yeah, I know. It was like, it was a Star Trek episode.
Well,
once you bring the regulations in, once you bring the regulations in, and that's like the Klingons kind of stuff. But anyway, that the regulators sometimes are the biggest threat or at least the biggest obstacle. But I remember you describing what the app did. It's an app on the phone. And the old school way of measuring wounds was that little ruler that we all used in grade school, the doc or the nurse would come in and hold it in one direction and then twist it a little bit and hold it in another. And that was the X and Y axis. And they'd write that down in your chart. And sometimes the size of the wound and how large it's spreading has a lot to do with whether you're getting better or worse. And so, what understanding that it's about treatment of people, but I think too, some of the stories that I remember, I'm in a long-term care facility. And it's a big deal if I don't get turned properly because of bed sores. And so not only is it a treatment thing from an immediate treatment, but it really is a quality of life thing for some of the patients. And there's a money Absolutely. Aspect to it as well, right? In terms of helping to spend money on the right treatment to lower treatment costs. Is that a part of it as well?
Yes, absolutely. And we can, take on a level. I appreciate more of the details about it because I love it and I'm, passionate about it. When I first got involved, my wife's like, "You don't even like blood. You know, why are you going to get involved in wounds?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't like blood. What am I doing?" But I've learned a lot about wounds. I've went into nursing homes on the floor myself, taking pictures with an iPad of their wound. That could have been on their butt or on their foot. I've been in there doing it myself because I wanted to learn what it was like. And, you're right. Even at some of the major hospitals in Columbus, most of them, they still use a ruler. They don't use WoundWise. Our product's called WoundWise. You can, learn more about it at woundwiseiq.com. But WoundWise is not used at some of these major hospitals for a ton of reasons. We could talk about it if you want. But it does make the process better, in my mind, because it is manual today. They're measuring with a physical ruler in most cases. And they write down the number. They go over to their EMR. They enter the number. And sometimes they have the right number. So there's areas for that could be mistakes there. And the product itself is just more accurate because if you measure length times width for all you engineers out there and mathematicians, if you measure length times width of an object, you say, tell me the area of length times width. That's a square. And most wounds are not square. So it's really not an accurate depiction of area. And still the barometer of healing. If you want to know, if your grandparents have a wound and healing, you want to look at the change in area over time. And so our application will put up on the screen the picture from last month and the picture from the month before and the picture from the month before with all the stats. But so you can see the width and the area and the true, what we call the planimetric or true surface area. What are those doing over time?
Well, and it's not just two-dimensional. A wound is not to get into territory that's going to turn people's stomachs, but a wound's got some depth to it as well. So it's really three dimensions that you guys...
You can track depth and add to it. We track volume. Area is still the barometer, but there is an aspect of depth that is a factor also. And we can track that in our system too. But 3D objects and taking pictures of that wound in 3D can get very expensive. So you look at some of these expensive cameras that could cost you thousands of dollars, whereas we have a service and we're using commercially available devices. So if you're a home healthcare nurse and you're taking care of a patient at their home, you can use your iPhone. You don't have to invest in a big, huge camera that would cost a lot of money. And what if you have 35 home healthcare nurses? How are you going to buy 35 of those? So we try to work with the devices that they have. Our software is just downloadable to their device. And so they just pay a monthly service fee for the use of the software. So it makes it much easier for them to get into it.
That's very cool. So one thing I heard earlier is there's a lot of ideas in the marketplace to solve the same problem. So it sounds like it's not always the idea that's the most important thing, but the execution of the idea. So we know you had to build software, you had to make it secure, you had to meet healthcare regulations, you had to meet, I heard the FDA, and I know that their process is quite extensive. What other things... do you see from an execution standpoint, somebody's got a great idea, what is important from an execution perspective to take that idea and actually make it a success?
Well, you've got to go in the field and see what's going on yourself. So what you develop has to be based on what's needed in the market, not what you think a great product would be. So that's the most important thing. That you're taking money, investors, make sure they develop is something that works for that market. In technology, when you're calling on big companies, the biggest challenge, and GBQ and yourself are very helpful with this at some big hospitals with this, but integrating into their network, and what they require in terms of protocols and security is very important to big hospitals that have systems in place with data that should be protected. And how are we going to be part of that ecosystem, you know, with our new cloud-based startup software? You know, you got to be able to fit into that. That's a major challenge. You need good technology people, great security people, you know, in order to, you know, have that conversation, figure out what you need to do, and probably need more money to go out and do that, to invest in that, so that you can call on those big companies and show them that you have it covered.
Well, I think sometimes big companies and even mid-market companies are surprised when they really take a hard look, you know, from the other perspective at how many of these cloud-based apps they have in their IT landscape. And the healthcare community, because of the regulatory models that are in there, kind of raise that awareness. But a lot of businesses aren't aware that they're running a lot of their business processes on free apps or downloadable apps or apps that are, you know, readily available on employees' phones. And that's a fairly interesting market from the perspective of those of us that are trying to protect businesses or help them meet those regulatory standards, or the you know, the small business folks, the startups that are trying to build a product that can fit into that. And there's obviously going to be so much growth in that area that it's going to be a continued set of challenges on both sides. The startup that needs to get over the regulatory hurdle, and then the bigger business or the mid-market business that's a consumer of it, it doesn't understand maybe necessarily all the exposures that come with some of those technologies. And you've had some experience working with the regulators and working with the risk management people at the companies that you've worked with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are steps to get through the system. You have to take those steps. You can't even go to market if you're not FDA registered. But I want to mention also a big announcement today I want to say for your podcast was our second product. We have a second product that just was patented. And so our announcement is the patent, and we just got patented by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for BurnIQ. So we got WoundWise IQ, which is the product we just been talking about that uses image analytics on a phone or an iPad to take a picture of a wound. Now we're looking at BurnIQ to look at burn wounds. You cannot take a picture and tell how bad a burn is. It's the damage is beneath the surface of the skin. And so we're using ultrasound with artificial intelligence and teaching our software to learn how to read ultrasound videos. And we just got that product, BurnIQ, patented. So that's my big announcement for today. And it helps physicians analyze burn wounds as soon as they come in. Someone comes in, if you got burned and you went to the emergency room, with our software, that physician is going to get a great feel for how bad that wound is. It's not BurnIQ is not on the market yet. We've got a prototype, a working prototype, and that's a patent.
Well, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah,
I know the. I'm not a medical professional by any stretch, but I know that, you know, there's so much variety when you look at a burn, and I understand enough to know the difference, some of the different challenges from a wound, a scrape or a cut or a puncture to, you know, scalding water versus some chemical burn, that there's so much variety in that. That's cool. And that's still, you're going to be doing that on commercially available devices. So, or is that going to require special technology when you start getting into some of the sound wave challenges?
Well, we think the way to market, and we'd love to get partners if they're interested, ultrasound providers, ultrasound manufacturers. This would be an app on their device. If you go into an emergency room, they have ultrasound there now, but it's being used on lungs, you know, for things like COVID. It's a mobile device, and you can actually attach a transducer that you might have seen when you're mother, when a, you know, wife's getting a pregnancy check and they run the ultrasound transducer, it's called, over the mother's stomach. That little transducer that they're waving like a wand over the stomach, that can be attached to an iPad. So you don't need the big cart-based device. There's ultrasounds on a cart and there's mobile ultrasounds. So if you go into emergency room, you're going to find these devices. And on that iPad mobile ultrasound, our app could be running there. So we're looking to partner with these ultrasound manufacturers that already have devices out there in emergency rooms around the U.S. And our app could be added to that device.
Well, that's cool. Good for you. Congratulations on that announcement. So we've talked a little bit about...
Thank you.
You're welcome. You talked a little bit about small business impact of the community, technology, probably more healthcare than either one of us expected when we planned this. Maybe maybe some of the topics we got into are a little gross for some, but we've covered a lot of ground. I want to get personal. And the thing when I get personal with you, the thing that stands out is healthcare. So I know you're a marathoner. I think you're crazy. You run a lot, but you started running as part of an effort to beat cancer. And I think your first run was when you were in treatment, which sounds nuts to me. So tell me a little bit about that experience. And at the end of it, I know that you use that experience to do some inspirational speaking and activities around the community. So let's get personal. Tell me about all that.
Oh yeah, well, thank you so much. And you know, the biggest opportunity I have had in my life is getting cancer. I mean, it's been the most positive thing because it's made me a better person. And that's really the bottom line is how do I take that challenge and turn it into something positive and help other people? And that's really the summary of the whole thing. I'm very involved with Children's Champion Program at Children's Hospital. I dedicate my race every year to children fighting cancer. I specifically look out and meet their families, meet the kids. And I run for one of those kids. And, you know, they love, so do I. I have people that send me their names from around the world that I put on my shirt. I write their names on my shirt. And I tell people, just tell me someone that has fought cancer. Maybe they lost. You know, maybe they passed away. But I put their name on my shirt. Maybe they're still fighting it. I'm going to put their name on my shirt. And I'm running this race, Doug, with all these names on my shirt. It's so powerful. To feel, you know, being fight these people against this terrible disease. And I've got an opportunity because I was able to beat it. Thanks God. I was able to beat cancer. And now I can run for these other people and motivate them and show them that they can overcome it too.
I've had my mother fought hard and we lost her. Cancer is a terrible thing. And I know that really that drives your passion. You congratulations on the win. And congratulations on that, flipping that around and seeing that as such a positive experience in your life. The GBQ is very involved in the cancer fundraising. We run a bike group with Pelotonia every year. And there's a lot of stories Sure. of the folks on our bike team that I have from their personal experience in terms of cancer as well. So I'm glad that it's not just about business. It's about living, and you've taken that part of your life and given back to the community. So that's, I'm thrilled to hear that story. I'm glad you were able to share that.
I'd love to be able to go out and speak to groups. If anyone, you know, has a group they want me to speak to, I do a little talk about this. And this quest I call Gary's Race, my quest, I'm a better man. And I talk about, you know, what I went through and how I overcame it and I try to inspire other people. And I built an inspirational song list, my top 20 inspirational song list, which were songs that got me through cancer. And then I got kids that I ran from. I asked them, what's your favorite song? And when you fought cancer, what'd you like? And they gave me these crazy songs, but I put them in my list. So I got these 20 awesome inspirational songs that, you know, anybody wants to fight cancer, there's some great songs.
Well, I know we're going to have a page up after we publish this podcast. And so we got to put that list amongst some of the other things that we're going to put about you and about this conversation so people can link to it. But here we are. We're at the final countdown, Gary. We've sent 5 questions. We're going to ask every guest as we work through this. So we're going to run down through these 5 questions on the final countdown. You're inspirational. Who inspires you?
People that give up everything that they have to accomplish what they want. Give up something, anything you can for something you believe in. You know, it could be an athlete, could be someone in the military, could be a CEO in a startup, and just someone that fights through the adversity and doesn't want to give up and keeps getting up and keeps fighting. That really is what inspires me.
What is your favorite life hack?
Well, I think my key, and I actually asked my wife about this question, like, what does she think? You know, and it's true. I have an awesome calendaring product and it's in Excel. I call it a multi-dimensional, multi-color calendar. So, I've tried different calendaring products. They can't do what mine can do. I can tell you, I got goals by day, personal and business. It's flexible. It's complex. It's my calendaring.
So is the answer I'm stunned. Cause I'm not sure if the answer was my favorite life hack is my calendar or my wife. Cause it seems like your wife plays a big role in that life of yours too. Anyway, we'll keep moving. What's your most valuable failure?
I talk in my book, The Growth Cube. It's at thegrowthcube.com. I talk about it in my book. There's six chapters in my book that have to do with a cube. If you look at a cube, it has six sides. And so there's six chapters in my book, which are the six dimensions I believe it takes to grow a company. And things that I've learned from Doug Davidson, a lot of other great people. And the sixth chapter is about leadership, that it takes great leadership. The leadership and financial is the foundation of any great company, is great leadership and great financial systems. And in that chapter six, my initial paragraph talks about my failures, where I failed. I think the biggest failure that I would say is in my leadership companies is letting people go that I should not have let go. Not that we financially should not have done it, but I was part of a big company. It's about the quarter. We're a public company. It's about hitting the numbers. At least it was back then. We talked about companies changing that now, but there was significant pressure. And that's how I learned, to meet that quarterly bottom line. And boards love that. They love that you can hit the bottom line on the quarter. And that's how I was trained. And I let some people go in order to hit the quarter. And I really don't think that was me. That's probably why I ended up running my own companies, because it was going against the grain of who I am. And I believe in people. I love people. And I love building teams. And to let someone go out of one of my, look back, I think, man, why didn't I do something different, get more creative, fought harder to keep these people in my company? And that's my biggest failure.
You work hard, Gary. Actually, it sounds like, in my mind, that Excel spreadsheet that you keep your calendar in is work hard. And then everything else after that is even harder. So what do you do to balance life out? How do you play?
Hey, you talk about working out. I work out all the time. Emily. I take my wife to dinner all the time, spend time with my kids. I manage that on my calendar. I make appointments. I set times aside to do those things. And, that's doing. I do what I set out to do.
So we're living in this world with a bunch of technology that we never really thought would ever get here, was big dreams. What did you dream about becoming when you were in middle school?
I really wanted to be a coach, a sports coach, but I really love being a coach. And today I love coaching. I do a lot of different types of coaching beyond business coaching. I love to coach and I love coaching and playing sports while in school. I didn't dream of becoming a CEO. My dad was not a CEO. I never really had that kind of, background growing up. My dad was a middle manager at Rockwell and he was consistent, but I never really had that CEO vision, even though I love to do it, because it has so many aspects that I love to do, people and financial and customers and performance, all of that stuff I love. But being a CEO, I didn't dream of being a CEO until I was, a large way through my career. And I saw a CEO, my first mentor, Bob Yapko. I was on his staff and I saw Bob run that company. And I thought, wow, I really love how Bob's doing this. I'd love to do that job. And that's how I became a CEO.
So that's the later on in life dream, not your 12-year-old dream. I think a lot of us look back and think, what in the world? And some of the things that we're working with now, if you had told people when you were 12, I'm going to create an application that measures wounds, and it's going to be on your phone that you carry around in your back pocket, they would have thought you were nuts. So it's cool that you're doing part of that dream. You're just not coaching sports. You're coaching business.
Yeah. Well, and other things too.
So I've known you for 5 years, give or take six. Maybe if we do the math a little bit better. I've learned a lot more about you today. Learned some things about the community today. Where can listeners find you online and connect with you? Feel free to list it out, and then we will make sure that it's on the webpage that's associated with this broadcast.
Well, first of all, thank you so much. And I appreciate you and the GPQ team. I've worked with you guys for many years, and you do a professional quality job, and I appreciate all aspects of your business. You guys continue to grow and offer more things for CEOs to help their companies. And I just wanted to let you know I appreciate that, and I appreciate being on the show, being able to share these kind of ideas. I love it, man. I could talk about this stuff forever. I know you could too. In terms of my coaching business, just check out my website at inspireyourselftoday.com. Inspireyourselftoday.com. Not inspire yourself tomorrow. Inspireyourselftoday.com. So check that out. And you can get to me through there. And then for our startup, medcomplianceiq.com. Medcomplianceiq.com. MedCompliance IQ is the parent, and our two products are WoundWise and Burn IQ. So we talked about those. But yeah, we'd love to find some partners, people that are in the wound care space. I'd love to talk with you and meet with you, talk about how we might help each other out.
And I know Gary is very prolific on LinkedIn as well. And we'll make sure that we have that on the page as well, your LinkedIn address. if they just want to connect more from a general business network perspective, I know that you're open to that as
sure.
Well.
Love really, that. Yeah, absolutely.
I really appreciate your time today. It's been fun. Like I said, known you for a long time, learned a lot. More Gary Ross stories for me to tell as I meet other people. We've got to get together face to face as we work towards this world opening back up. But thanks today for joining and opening up on Empower Hour.
Thank you.
Time's up. Thanks for listening to this episode of Empower Hour. Join us next time by subscribing to Empower Hour on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your preferred listening platform. Want more GBQ? We don't blame you. Visit us online at gbq.com for the business news and advice that matters most. Who is empowering your growth?